welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter Mike Bond, back for the second episode of this week, as promised, after our conversation earlier this week with Frankie Edgar, looking at the UFC featherweight and lightweight divisions. Make sure to check that out if you have not already. But we are moving on to a different type of business for this episode. We are going to look at the state of PFL with commentator Dan Hardy, going over the top storylines, fighters to watch, where the organization sits going into this critical year. We talk a lot about UFC, of course, on this podcast, it being the predominant brand in MMA, but PFL has a very, very critical 2026 coming up, the last year on its current U.S. broadcast rights agreement deal with ESPN. Is ESPN interested in staying in mixed martial arts beyond this year? Can PFL put on a product that makes them interested in staying in mixed martial arts beyond this year? Certainly there's some good building blocks and some good elements to this company that could set up some great opportunities going forward, but it certainly has to come together. The fighters have to deliver, the matchmaking has to deliver, and the product overall has to deliver. So it's a big time, and I thought before this Saturday's big first event of the year, PFL Road to Dubai, headlined by Usman Nurmagomedov versus Alfie Davis, this was the perfect time to have Dan Hardy on and go through every weight class and what's to come, what we should get excited about. So if you don't know too much about the PFL brand and you're not following super closely, I think this is a conversation worth listening as we kind of talk up some of the big players over there and what it could mean for this year to come. So a very enjoyable conversation, insightful conversation from Dan Hardy, who joined us all the way from over there in Dubai. So appreciate his time, appreciate your guys' viewership. Please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment, follow, all those different things. And I will be right back on the other side of the break for the 2026 PFL Mega Preview with Dan Hardy. We are back here on the Bonfire Podcast with Dan Hardy of PFL to do a mega 2026 PFL preview of sorts. Dan, the first major event of the year right around the corner on Saturday in Dubai. I believe you're out there now. How's everything going so far?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I got in this morning. We've just done face-offs for the main event over at the Burj Khalifa fountains, which were pretty amazing. But we all got drenched as the fountains went up. They all came down on us. But it's going to look really cool. The face-off's going to look really good. So that was main event. And then we've got all the rest of the main fights tomorrow. We're doing them at the frame. And then we're rolling, you know, weight cut, fight day, and we're into it. And there's some good fights on this card. It's an exciting one to be calling, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get into kind of the specifics of this card, but I'm curious just off the bat, like, you know, this is a bit of a new era for PFL here, some changeover in personnel behind the scenes. I think a lot of people know this is an important year for the company with the television deal in the US and everything. What's just like the vibe right now is, you know, I feel like everyone's kind of locked in and knowing the importance, but maybe some new faces, some different energy. How are you feeling about everything over there so far?
I'll be honest, this for me has been the most positive feeling that I've had at the start of the PFL year. You know, I mean, you know, Don and Pete brought me in and they've looked after me, and, you know, I've loved being with the PFL to this point. But of course, we need to make a bunch of changes. The changes have been made. And I'll be honest, I mean, you know, the time I've spent talking to John Martin, I've been nothing but impressed with the guy. You know, he knows MMA. He loves MMA as a fan. He's been on the outside for a long time watching as a fan, and, you know, has almost been involved a couple of times. I like the fact that he's got a lot of passion for what he's doing. He doesn't need to be doing this. You know, he could have been chilling and living his best life, but he's here, you know, building the PFL into something that it deserves to be. So I feel very, very positive for this year. Of course, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's an important year for us, for the whole company, but I don't know. I've got that kind of fresh art project, kind of startup vibe about me at the moment, and I'm just excited to get this year rolling. I think people are going to notice a big difference this year with the PFL product, and I think it's going to be all for the better.
How has your role changed, if at all, this year? I know you're doing the commentary, but for PFL Europe, you're doing some scouting and matchmaking and things like that. Is that still kind of the case through this year, or are things transitioning a little bit on what your duties are?
Yeah, they'll be transitioning a little bit. I mean, PFL Europe has been absorbed into the bigger PFL show, which is good because, I mean, honestly, the shows that we've had in Europe, as you know, have been really the bigger PFL shows. you know, selling out in France and Belgium. It's PFO Europe's been a special thing, but it makes sense to connect the brands together. And lean into Europe a little bit more. We've got a lot of good stars out here. And I also want to see some of these European stars get over to the US and start showing people stateside what they're capable of as well. My main focus this year I'm going to be talent. I want to be focused on commentary, on analysis, creating content, breakdown videos and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you and I, we're at the coalface every day, so we're always watching new fighters and stuff. And there's always someone that will pop into my mind and I'm thinking to myself, we should sign that guy. So I'll be feeding into fighter ops and the guys right at the very top all the way through the year. But yeah, I want to get back to making content, making videos.
Yeah, I dig it. No, you do such a great job with that. I think it's a huge asset. A couple last things before we get into the weight classes here. How do you feel about kind of moving away from the tournament format and just focusing on like the best matchmaking? Definitely a value in those tournaments, but do you feel like this is kind of the better path forward after doing that format for so many years?
Yeah. I was pushing to kind of move away from the tournament. As you will have noticed, you know, when I first took over with PFL Europe, we had 4 weight classes and I moved that down to 2 weight classes just purely because, you know, it's very, very difficult to have 4 stacked weight classes with 8 fighters in Europe. You know, it's much easier if you're having a global tournament, you can find 8 talented fighters, but I don't want to feel like I'm putting fights on the card that are there because of the weight class. You know, there are so many good fighters across the world. I mean, but particularly my focus across Europe. I felt very restricted by the weight classes. So, you know, I was always pushing back on them. That as well as elbows were the main things that I was working against, really, to be honest, because they were the things that were making everything about the PFL more challenging, both for people inside the company and, you know, building the shows, trying to hold them together, but also, you know, the fans outside of the company as well that are like, hang on, so you're getting points for this and now the points have gone away and now we've got a tournament, but there's a champ and a tournament. Again, just very, very confusing. And all this stuff, you know, it's all what John Martin flagged when he came in, you know, because fortunately he was able to look at this from the outside as a fan and go, hang on, this is not really making sense to me. And if it's not making sense to me, then, you know, we're going to struggle to recruit new fans. So this new way of approaching it is going to make a lot more sense. Standing champions, gold around people's waists until somebody beats them and takes it off them, you know, as combat sports has always been.
Yeah, agreed. And the last note before we start getting into these weight class breakdowns, the introduction of the rankings is kind of the big piece of PFL news that started off this year. How do you feel about that?
Look, it's the right move forward. You know, it's definitely the right move forward. It makes it a lot easier for the fans to, you know, look at the events, look at the matchups and make sense of who these people are and where they're going, you know, what trajectory they're on and what they've got to do to get themselves to a title. Rankings are always going to be a bone of contention for everybody in mixed martial arts. And I do find myself agreeing with Dana White on some of those rankings. I'll be honest. I mean, you know, some of them didn't make sense to me. I know there were a lot of complaints from the hardcore fans that had looked through them and kind of picked holes in a few of them. And look, I'm doing the same thing internally as well. Obviously, it's Combat Registry. They're the guys that are putting the rankings together. My main thing right now is I want updated rankings next week after this event. Like, get it together, get us a fresh set of rankings because, you know, we need to stay on top of them and keep them updating. I mean, we've got, bless him, I love Conor Hughes, but he's ranked number 10 in the lightweight division. He's just lost to Chizov. Chizov should be in that spot. So we need to update those rankings quickly. And that's my next priority.
Yeah, I love that. No, I think that's the right mentality towards it. Okay, Dan, I have every weight class here and kind of a storyline or a fighter or something associated with it. I'm just going to kind of go in random order here, but I'll probably close with lightweight since that's our big title fight on Saturday here. Let's start at featherweight. No champion right now. We have Khizriov ranked number 1, but the fighter that I want to talk about is AJ McKee. He is now 30 years old. We've seen this guy, you know, from his MMA debut fighting in Bellator. And I just kind of want to know, like, is this going to happen? He has all the elements of being a star. He's clearly extremely talented, has, you know, an amazing mentor and his father in his corner. But like, it felt like all the potential has been there. But I don't know if he's maximized it the way that we felt like he's going to. Like, my question around AJ McKee in this division is like, is it going to happen? Is this AJ McKee's breakout year finally?
Look, I mean, I think the reality is he's the guy to beat in the division, isn't he? You know, it doesn't matter who else you are in the division. You know, I mean, Khizriov is an absolute terror in the division. But he needs a win over someone like AJ McKee to really solidify himself at the top of that division. Now, I've always been a big fan of AJ, but when he moved up to lightweight, I felt like he gave a lot of the physical attributes that he made the most of when he was a featherweight. And you could kind of see that in the Paul Hughes fight. You know, even though Paul Hughes used to be a featherweight, he looked a lot bigger, in my opinion, than AJ. And I just don't think he has the explosiveness to match some of these lightweights. Whereas at featherweight, man, he's got skills in every area of the game that you would want to go. And he's so fluid moving from one range to another. I feel like the weight class is gonna suit him much better. And I also think, you know, it kind of gives him that new lease on competition for 2026, doesn't it? You know, I've got to focus. I know where I am in the rankings. I know who's around me. And I know what I've got to do. And I also think he knows that even though he doesn't have the belt right now, he's the one with the target on his back. Everyone wants to fight him. So, you know, he's going to have to raise his game this year, but he's already got the capabilities. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah. Do you feel like they should have slapped a title on this fight with Borix, or are we just kind of like the winner here? Are they looking at Khizriev and maybe that's our inaugural title fight for this weight class?
I mean, you know, I think it makes sense that Khizriev's, you know, one half of that title fight. I also like the fact that, you know, we're gonna get another performance out of AJ. Boric, I mean, I was watching him train Extreme Couture a few weeks ago, and I've always loved his style of striking, you know, and if AJ starts to play that striking game with him, that's a very, very 50-50 fight. You've got to see AJ use his whole game. And if we do that, then he's going to be exposing some of his wrestling skills to Khizriev, who's going to be trying to make the most of that part of his game. So I like the fact that we've got the matchup, but if I'm AJ, I would want to be fighting the best guy in the division straight away. So I'm not giving away too much information.
Yeah, for sure. And some other great fighters in this weight class. Jesus Pinedo fights this weekend. Ibrahimov is a talented prospect as well. So I like where this division is going. And yeah, we'll see what ends up being the title fight. But yeah, AJ McKee, you know, he was up there, had an argument, maybe being the best featherweight in the world a few years ago, and hasn't really kept that momentum. So I'm curious to see if he can pick that up, because I've been high on this guy since day one and, you know, really want the best for him for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. Look, and the reality is, look, everybody talking about AJ and Khizriev is only going to motivate Pinedo. I mean, I remember when he knocked out Brendan Lochner, and he came over to the commentary booth like he proved us wrong. You know what I mean? He's got a chip on his shoulder, and it motivates him every time he gets in the cage. So I think the more we're focusing on other people in the weight class, the more it's going to make him rise to the occasion. And I mean, his opponent is a real, real tough individual, a standout amateur IMAF champion. You know, we could have another featherweight that we're all talking about after the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. No, this is a great weight class. So that puts a bow on featherweight. Let's jump to middleweight. Obviously, we got Costello Vanstinas, who had, I think, the comeback and the submission of the year in 2025 against Johnny Eblen. Now he's going to defend that belt against Fabian Edwards. We have Johnny Eblen welcoming Brian Battle to PFL coming up here in a few weeks. This division, I think, has a lot of established names who've kind of been there in PFL, been there in Bellator, and now it's kind of all coming together. What are your thoughts on the top of this division right now, which seems to be ripe with a lot of talent?
I mean, look, those two main fights, of course, you know, the rematch between Costello and Fabian, the fact that it's five rounds is going to give us a much clearer, definitive answer as to who's the best. I mean, the last one they had was so close, so back and forth. I felt like they both could have done a lot more. And, you know, since then, Fabian's won the PFL tournament. Since then, Costello's taken the belt off Eblen, the guy that Fabian couldn't beat two times in a row. It's a really fascinating fight. Both of these guys have moved along a lot in their careers. They both added a lot to their game. You know, Fabian's been out in Thailand. I know he's now back in Birmingham. And for me, this is going to be one of the most technical fights at middleweight, just across the sport. I mean, I've always held Adesanya in very high regard, but he's always been, you know, unless he was fighting Poatan, he was always the dominant striker in there. And I feel very much like Costello and Fabian. They've got elite level striking skills. They're really going to push each other. But I also feel like, you know, you've got that Edwards takedown defense that Leon made so famous against, you know, really, really strong grappling that we saw take out Eblen in the last fight from Vanstinas. So that's fascinating for me. And I also think, you know, Brian Battle, he looked really good at dirty boxing. That was his middleweight, he kind of returned to middleweight since 2022, yeah. If I remember correctly. I thought he looked healthy. I mean, I've always felt like he was a big welterweight anyway, and he always looked quite emaciated, quite shrunk, whereas middleweight is going to suit his frame much better. And look, you know, if he comes in and takes Eblen out, then he puts himself right in the title picture as the next contender. So it's a big opportunity for him. And I'll flag one other name that's in the rankings, but he hasn't fought at middleweight yet. He's moving to middleweight, but that's Boris Atangana. I signed him from Patrick Habarora's gym a couple of years ago. He is going to be one of the most talked about MMA fighters in the world in a few years, I think. He's just, there's a special air around him, and he's been taking people out left and right. So when he moves down, I mean, he was a heavyweight all the way through his amateur. Crazy. I mean, he's big, but he's not massive. But at middleweight, he'll be cleaning people's clocks.
Very curious to see how that goes. Are you surprised at all they didn't go right back to the rematch between Eblen and Vancinas, given like how well Eblen was doing? And why do you ultimately think they went to the Edwards fight again, even though, you know, we know he's coming off a spectacular victory on his own right?
Yeah, I mean, I felt bad for Eblen, to be honest, because, you know, usually in that circumstance, when someone's been such a dominant champion, you kind of go, well, you know, you get the rematch, you deserve it. But I also don't mind the fresh blood being switched up at the top as well. I mean, Fabian was so close with that elbow in the first fight against Eblen. Credit to the cut, man. Most people wouldn't get off to carry on, right? I mean, it was wild, wasn't it? Like, literally right through his face. The thing is, you know, and this is when you have a really beautiful weight class, when you've got three or four people. It reminds me of when you got Randy, Tito, and Chuck, and you've got that just a real interesting, like, triptych of battles going on. I feel the same thing with this one, with Eblen and Fabian and Costello. I feel like we could just keep watching them fight over and over again. We're going to get different versions. Like you said, I mean, if Eblen fought Costello again, I think a lot of people would expect him to win based on how the last fight was going. But I would also say that if you put Fabian in there against Eblen, he might connect with a shot that gets him the win that time around. So, you know, and then we've got other guys. I mean, Impa Kasanganai and Josh Silvera and Dalton Roster. I mean, you know, middleweight stacked.
Yeah, it is a great division. And this fight between Eblen and Vancinas will be the headliner of PFL's debut in Spain and Madrid. You obviously have a very good feel on the European market. Like, what are you expecting in terms of the promotional debut in Spain and what kind of impact PFL can have in that market?
Yeah, I'm really excited to see, to be honest, because, I mean, right now, the French fans are the standout fans. You know, a few years ago, the Irish were holding it down. Right now, you know, the French fan base is crazy. But Spain is a sporting country in every sense of the word, you know what I mean? And it's like, I remember Spanish football fans traveling over to the UK to watch games, and just the passion was just, it was palpable as soon as they were in the city. And I think, you know, when PFL arrives in Madrid, when you've got fans coming into town, we're going to have people traveling in from all around Europe as well, which is going to kind of set the tone in the arena. You know, we've got some people on there that have got traveling support. And I think people are going to be there just to see what it's like. You know, I mean, it's the first time that they're going to have a big event in Spain. They've had some really good shows so far. I mean, I've been watching the likes of WOW, and they put on really, really solid shows. This feels a bit more, you know, this feels like the arrival of like the premium, though, you know, and I think that's going to really get the fans excited. And the card, we've still got a couple of announcements to come, which are going to really shake people up.
Yeah, that's PFL Madrid, March 20th. And you mentioned his name just before we move on from middleweight, Brian Battle, the signing. I thought a great signing. Obviously, you know, his UFC run ended a little bit dubiously, but him being at middleweight hopefully alleviates any of those issues here. You mentioned that kind of three-headed monster at middleweight. Do you like his chances of kind of breaking through here? Or do you feel like this is a pretty tough introduction to PFL with Johnny Eblen here?
I mean, I think it's probably the worst stylistic matchup that he could have, to be honest. I look at it from my perspective. I mean, man, like, Johnny Eblen's wrestling is ridiculous. Like, proven over 25 minutes. And what's he going to look like coming off his first loss? I mean, for me, Islam Makhachev was 10 times the fighter that he was after experiencing that loss, because it gives you something else to chase. Like, Eblen's been the king of the division for how long? So now he's had to see that belt around somebody else's waist. I can't imagine what the intensity of his training's been like. I'll be speaking to some of his camp this week and trying to figure out what he's been doing differently. But Eblen's just an absolute animal. So you've got to imagine that he's going to put that frustration of losing his belt into the battle fight. It's going to make it really tough for Brian, bless him.
Yeah, I get very curious to see how Johnny rebounds because he was on such a roll there. And yeah, tough way for him to lose, but I'm sure only motivating, comes from an incredible camp, has an awesome corner. So very curious to see. Okay, let's move on to a women's division here. Let's go to women's flyweight. Obviously, you know, Dakota Dacheva, you can't talk about this division without her. She is one of the faces of PFL, one of the true, genuine homegrown stars here. You know, we were hoping she was going to fight in December. Obviously, injuries have been a little bit of a problem for her since winning that tournament in 24. But this weight class is great. Some new signings like Viviana Arujo and Ariana Da Silva. I'm really filling out. But what are your kind of feelings on where we're going on the women's side, especially with this weight class? And it feels like there's a huge fight to be made there with Dacheva and Liz Carmouche.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that is the fight to make, isn't it? And I think it's the fight that both of those ladies want as well. It's, you know, it's the obvious victory for both of them in the division, the biggest win that they could get. But, you know, you look down the division, you know, you mentioned Viviani, you mentioned Lipsky. She's got a new name, hasn't she? I apologize.
Ariana Da Silva now, but yes, we still call her Lipsky from time to time.
Like, I mean, both of those ladies being added to the division are really, really interesting. The other one I will mention as well, I was watching her today. The young lady that's just stepped in, Antonia, to fight Denise this weekend. Like, yeah. I mean, a lot of people would look at her and go, she stepped in to replace Dakota. Denise is probably going to win. I've just watched her last fight on Levels again, and I forgot how dominant she was, how one-sided it was against Van Rouge. Like, she's a firecracker of a fighter. She reminds me a lot of Jessica Andrade in the way that she attacks with, like, heavy boxing combos. And then the other one, you know, Sabrina D'Souza, who beat Paulina in Leon. Another fighter that, you know, she, what, six fights into a career, had a great amateur career as well. Like, in a year's time, this division is going to look very different. And Dakota may look like she's in the Liz Carmouche position with all these young fighters coming through. She might have to keep this tide from rising too quickly because the talent's coming through.
Well, I'm sure that would be music to her ears. She doesn't seem like anyone who's, you know, reluctant to take on a challenge, and she wants all the smoke. I worry, like, do you have any concerns about these lingering hand issues that seem to be reoccurring now? This happens to fighters sometimes, but obviously given her style, she likes to throw, she likes to hit hard, and if you have constant hand problems, I'm sure that compromises you a little bit. Are you worried that, you know, this may take a little bit for her to get past?
Yeah, look, you know, it's not ideal. A hand injury is never a good thing for a fighter. The best thing she can do is to make sure she takes the time to get it fixed properly, and she's not rushing to, you know, to start hitting things again with it, because that's ultimately where these things get, you know, they prolong and they re-injure and all those kind of things. The other thing as well you have to consider is, I mean, Dakota's got six other weapons that she can use with elbows, knees, and kicks, you know what I mean? And she is an absolute brutalizer with her tie clinch. So, it's not going to affect her as much as it would if she was a boxer, say, for example. But, of course, she wants confidence in those hands. I also think that, you know, we're going to see more of her game as well, because she might not want to just be constantly cracking these girls in the face. I mean, like, you saw Sumiko Inaba. She's so tough. Denise would be the same, you know. Liz Carmouche would be the same. Like, Dakota might have to punch him a few times. She might have to mix up her game. And we've seen her with grappling. We saw her, it was the first season of PFL Europe. She got a beautiful rear naked choke with both arms trapped. I'm excited for her to come back. I actually saw her earlier today. She's in really good spirits and she looks healthy and strong. And one thing I will say, though, and I think flyweight right now is perfect for her, but I also do think that at some point bantamweight is going to be the right move for her. I think physiologically she's very, very big for this weight class. And as we know from guys like Tony Ferguson, if you try and stay in a weight class for too long, your body starts to suffer a little bit. So, you know, if she is dealing with injuries, you know, that might be something to consider in the future. Not just yet, but I would imagine in the next couple of years, she might have to consider moving up.
Yeah. Well, I have a question going off that, but I guess first, no champion in this 125 division right now. She has her tournament accolades. Liz Carmouche has her tournament and Bellator accolades. Like, this has to be the inaugural fight. And do you believe this should be the next fight for both in 2026 here?
I mean, it makes sense for me. It makes sense for me. Obviously, you know, Dakota was due to be fighting Denise on this card this weekend, which would have been a great fight. You know, I mean, obviously Denise is an excellent striker, but it wouldn't have proved anything like a win over Liz Carmouche would. But then, you know, I'll be honest, a win over Viviane Araújo is a big win for me. I mean, I would put her top five in our rankings anyway. I know she's eight in our rankings. I would put a top three, top four, no doubt about it. So I think that is a big win that Dakota could potentially chase. And also, you know, we don't know what Lipski's going to look like. She might come and absolutely start smashing, and that's another really interesting fight between two elite level strikers. So, you know, the PFL are working hard to you know, add some more people to this division. And I also think, you know, the free market's going to be opening up a bit more soon as well. We're going to get a few more fighters signing with us, I hope.
Good. Yeah, definitely. And as I said earlier, Dakota wants all the challenges. One challenge, I guess, are we questioning that she does want? And I'll package this into women's featherweight a little bit, which I know is an actual division, but you can't not talk about Chris Cyborg. And she is still contracted. She intends to have her MMA career finale. She's calling out Dakota. John Martin said he's like warming up to it a little bit, but I feel like so many question marks around that. She said she could get to 135 for it. Cyborg did. You just mentioned maybe at some point Dakota could go up. Like, does this fight appeal to you at all, or is this a little too crazy pursuing this matchup?
At 135, I think it would make sense. Like, there'd be no world in which it would be fair for Dakota to have to move up two weight classes and fight Cyborg, but also it wouldn't be healthy in any way for Cyborg to move any further past 135. I think it makes sense. I think at some point that super fight is going to be on the table. I don't know whether Cyborg's still going to be around or under contract or what, but right now, I mean, if I'm Dakota, I'm not thinking about going up a weight class to take on Cyborg and then come back down, because I don't think she would be able to come back down if she let herself grow into that weight class. I feel for Cyborg because she's a little bit stuck, right, isn't she? I mean, there aren't many options around for her. I really kind of wish that we could kind of interject her into that Amanda Nunes, Kayla Harrison circumstance. Even, I mean, Holly Holm, you know, she's wrestling and she's boxing. She's looking great. Amanda Serrano, like Savannah Marshall, like maybe we could find someone a bit left field for her. I wouldn't even mind watching her fight Clarissa Shields, to be honest. That'd be kind of, even though Clarissa's like a heavyweight now or whatever. But I just feel bad for Cyborg, because unless she waits around for Dakota to move up a weight class, I don't know if she's going to get the fight that she wants in her retirement.
Yeah, it feels more likely it's probably going to be like a Leah McCourt or something like that, right? Just someone that's kind of hanging around.
You just lost to Sarah, and you know, if we can get, you know, if Leah can get a win back, or, you know, something, even a couple of wins will be good. That could create an argument for it. But I don't know if Cyborg would feel any kind of victory right now of, you know, beating Leah when she's coming off a loss.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, what her priorities are, what she wants, and how big of a deal this is made. But obviously, she is one of the greatest, arguably greatest women's fighters ever. So for her to have her MMA finale in PFL, that feels like will be a big, you know, storyline and piece of the puzzle for this organization this year. So yeah, that'll be something very interesting to monitor going forward to see how that retirement fight is handled, because that's a big deal from my perspective, Dan. Okay, let's go all the way back down. Let's go to men's bantamweight here. I didn't have a ton on this one. Obviously, no champion right now, but it feels like when that time does come to introduce a belt, Sergio Pettis is kind of the guy. That spectacular knockout of the year contender that he got was incredible. If you were to put a title fight together with Sergio Pettis, who's kind of the guy that stands out to you? I know Rofion Stotts is number two, but we already kind of saw that. They have a friendly history. I don't know if we want to go back down that road again.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, Rafael Stotts is a fantastic fighter and belongs right at the top of the division. But for me right now, it'd be Taylor Lapillus. You know, he's had a couple of wins in the PFL. He's called out Sergio. He wants that fight. And he's also a very, very technical fighter. You know, he's not a reckless fighter that's going to be easy for someone like Sergio to pick off and pull apart. I think that would be a really, really high-level match. And I think that Taylor is deserving of that fight, to be honest. I think that makes a lot of sense. We've also got guys creeping up the division as well. You know, guys out of left field, the likes of Marcelo Alves. And, I mean, Justin Wetzel's not in the rankings. I would have probably ranked him. But, you know, bantamweights that are just kind of floating around that could quite easily step into the cage against any of these guys and cause them issues. I mean, if you look at that final that we had in the tournament last year with Alves and Wetzel, they were both alternates coming in, you know? And they both just, I mean, they literally stood on their heads to perform like they did. It was incredible. Alves about lost a knee in one of the fights. It was just, they both made fans out of me last year. And I feel like, you know, there's a couple of dark horses in this division. I mean, Lewis McGrillin's in the rankings as well. A couple of dark horses in this division that they're game and they're aggressive and they've got dynamic skills. And again, you know, old guard, young fighters coming through. I think we're going to see a transition in this weight class soon.
Yeah, bantamweight might be the best weight class in the sport, like globally, right? You look at all the organization, the talent distributed, it's very much up there, at least in the conversation. Okay, let's jump up to light heavyweight. Corey Anderson, our champion there. I think there's some talk of maybe him fighting Antonio Carlos Jr. That's the one that would make sense. He's out there saying, you know, keep me busy. I'll fight Vadim Nemkov. Let's settle our trilogy. Rob Wilkinson is back this weekend against Luke Trainer, who's a great prospect. I think he's coming back from like a 16-month layoff. Tyson Pedro, a UFC veteran, was signed. This weight class, you know, got a lot of names we're used to seeing, you know, through PFL and Bellator over the years. Corey Anderson running things. What do you just make of light heavyweight going into 2026?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a stacked weight class with some fighters that are still finding their feet in the division, in my opinion. Now, Luke Trainer and Simeon Powell are those two guys I'm talking about. Both have got all the potential in the world. But, I mean, Luke's got a great opportunity in front of him right now. If he can beat Rob Wilkinson, then, you know, that really propels him up into the division. But I mean, you look at the likes of Corey Anderson and Dovlatson and Yagshimuradov, like that is a big step up for those guys right now in their career. So for me, we've got a bit of a gap at light heavyweight. We've got a couple of guys at the top that can hold it down for a long time, but these young ones coming through, you know, I mean, I think Luke Trainer's got all the skills that he needs to just take over this division entirely, and he's got the confidence to go with it as well. Like, a win over Rob Wilkinson, I think, not only does a lot for his ranking, but does a lot for his own confidence, his ability to, you know, to step into a fight against someone like a Corey Anderson and believe that he can beat them. And the other one, Simeon Powell, I mean, you know, if I could give him, I always make a joke about this. I had unrealistic self-belief compared to what I was capable of. If I could just put a little bit of that in a bottle and give it to Simeon Powell, he'd just knee people's faces off left and right. It's just the one little bit that's missing. And I feel like because he had that struggle against Jakob Neddo, it's taken him a little bit of time to kind of find his feet and get back to the level that he should be performing at. I think Simeon's an incredible fighter. And just if he can connect that bit of confidence, him and Luke Trainer are the two new stars of the division.
Yeah, do you think Corey Anderson versus Shoeface, is that the fight to make in the interim while these guys kind of grow and continue to get their experience and try to level up there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Shoeface looked incredible last year. You know, what a career he's had. And still seeing developments in his game. You know, I mean, striking looked so much more confident the last time we saw him. And, you know, the fact that he did that reality TV show, it's given him some camera confidence as well. And I thought he looked great, yeah. But, I mean, those three at the top, like him and Corey and Yagshimuradov. And like you said, you throw Tyson Pedro into the mix as well. And, you know, he'll scrap with anybody.
No doubt. Okay, Dan, we got three divisions left here. We'll go before the ones related mostly to this weekend. We'll go up to heavyweight, which a lot to talk about here. I mean, Vadim Nemkov is incredible. He, you know, might be the highest or best fighter in all of PFL, you know, neck and neck with Usman Nurmagomedov in terms of like arguments for the best in the world in their weight class. You know, what are you kind of seeing that makes sense for him going forward? Obviously, these Francis Ngannou storylines and questions always lingering around this division. What do you make of heavyweight right now?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'd love to see Francis back in there, of course. You know, as a fan, I've always been captivated by him performing. I mean, Nemkov for me is like, he's like the new version of Andrei Arlovsky in the heavyweight division. Mm-hmm. He's a bit undersized, but he's a lot faster and he's a lot more technical than a lot of the people he's fighting. The other interesting person in the division for me is Denis Goltsov. You know, he had such a struggle getting to the finals, but, you know, a first round triangle over Popov. I think that was a 19 fight win streak that Popov was on that came to an end. And Denis Goltsov has got one of the best jabs in the sport. So I would love to see him get another opportunity. Another guy I really enjoy watching as well is Sergey Bilistany, who, you know, trained with Khabib, has been a part of that camp for a while, but then, of course, left because he was going to be fighting his teammates. But Bilistany's got like a very, very powerful, explosive game. And, you know, short range or long range, he can do a tremendous amount of damage. It's a fascinating division. You know, I mean, the other thing I've got to say, you know, we've got this fight this weekend. We've got Puya Romani against Carl Williams. You know, Carl, I was watching him working with Strickland and a few of the other guys. He was sparring with some of the big guys at Extreme Couture a little while back. And he's a strong fighter. He's, you know, he makes good decisions in awkward circumstances. And Puya Romani's young in his MMA career. He's got a lot of wrestling matches, some boxing matches and stuff. But, like, I mean, obviously what he did to Slim Trabelsi in the last fight was incredibly impressive, but he's still very young in his game. And Cole is he's a tricky guy, and I think this is a good opportunity for him. I think there's a lot of pressure on Puya this weekend. People are expecting him to be, like, the next big thing at heavyweight, especially in the PFL. And, you know, Cole's got a good opportunity to stop that train.
Yeah. What do you think they do with Nemkov? I mean, if this Ngannou fight doesn't happen, who do you think is kind of the clear next matchup or the most intriguing fight for him right now, in your opinion?
I would like to see the Goltsov fight, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Goltsov was a tournament winner. I feel like stylistically as well, it's a very, very different fight to anybody that Nemkov's faced before. You know, when you're dealing with someone like Henan Fajeda, he's very, very dangerous at certain points in the fight, but then you can put him in positions where you feel relatively safe, and that's not the case with Goltsov. At a distance, he can tag you with a jab without you seeing his arm moving, and, you know, it hits the ground, and, you know, he's got subs off his back that can put Fedor students away. So, you know, I've always been a big fan of Goltsov, and I think his kind of time of his career is coming towards an end. So, you know, maybe another 18 months or 2 years in him, I'd like to see him in there with Nemkov.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I'd love to see, you know, PFL maybe pursue some of these big name heavyweights that could be out there to be brought in the division, right? I know Rico Verhoeven is floating out there. It feels like Gable Steveson is kind of connected to the UFC already, but who knows if his mind could be changed. But I feel like, you know, one of these guys could be a big coup if PFL is able to get their hands or at least talking to them.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, Tom Aspinall's kind of done the job for us, to be honest. You know, he's kind of built a heavyweight European team. So anyone that's not on the UFC roster that's that's worth signing is probably training at that gym right now. I was sad that we let Ante Delia go. I know that he had a bit of a rough experience in the UFC with the circumstance around that. But, you know, for me, the heavyweight division's always wide open because heavyweights are more prize fighters than anybody at any other weight class, in my opinion. You know, like a heavyweight, they can do other things, you know, like Puya Romani, if he was born in a different country, would play a different sport probably, you know, same with Henan Fajeda. Randy always says it. If he was born in the US, he would have been on a football team. You know, right. Heavyweights can kind of turn their hand to whatever they want. So when they see they can knock people out cold and make a lot of money doing it, you know, heavyweights tend to make financial decisions much easier in mixed martial arts than other weight classes. People in other weight classes tend to choose the opportunity and the exposure and the accolades, whereas a heavyweight's like, just pay me. I'm just going to knock somebody out and pay me. And, you know, you look around the world, you've got guys like Phil DeFries. He would be my first signing. KSW champion for 150 years or something.
Seriously.
Right? Rug. Fascinating guy. That he does when he's coming down to the ring, that scares the hell out of me. I'd sign Rug. I'd probably sign Malakin as well from ONE Championship. You know, there are some good guys out there. Heavyweight's wide open, and I feel like there are a couple of other guys out there that we could grab, and I'll be pushing for it. I'm hoping we do soon.
Yeah, and what's your gut say as far as Francis? I mean, I could understand all the reasons why he wouldn't have another fight. You mentioned, you know, financial decisions. I know there's a lot of stuff that goes on with him, but I know John Martin has said too they would like to do something special for his final fight on his contract. It seems to be an ever-changing situation, but do you feel like Francis Ngannou fights in PFL in 2026, or does this relationship come to an end before then?
No, I think we'll see him. I do think we'll see him. I think Francis wants to fight. You know, I think with the things that's happened in his life recently, you know, is at a real rough time of it, and I feel like the grounding force in his life right now would be getting back in the gym and back to training. I loved watching him go over into boxing. I could still watch him have a few boxing matches. I wouldn't mind that, but another fight in MMA would be great. I mean, Ngannou versus Nemkov would just be next level, wouldn't it? I mean, you've got a Fedor student that's undersized heavyweight, but is just an absolute assassin, taking on Francis Ngannou, who really we still can't quantify him as a force in mixed martial arts. You know, I mean, the Ford Escort traveling at such and such miles an hour. Yeah. It's like, it's all hyperbole, isn't it? Like the cube that you punch on the thing and the numbers that. It's all hyperbole. Shake the guy's hand, let him slap you on the shoulder and just feel the force that he can generate, the size that he is. I'll be disappointed if we don't see him again because he's such a special individual. And if we can get him in there against Nemkov, that's the fight to make.
Yeah, that fight could definitely move the needle for PFL, I think, in a big way. So, okay, let's go to welterweight here, Dan. Two weight classes left. Obviously, a huge fight on Saturday. Shamil Musaev versus Ramzan Kurmagomedov, what an incredible matchup. Maybe the most skilled fight in PFL history. I mean, record-wise, geez Louise, those two guys, incredible. This is a fun division. You got Thad Jean, who seems to have something genuinely going for him in terms of like traction and entertainment and knowing how to operate in the space. Welterweight is very good, and you know, it gets highlighted in a big way in Saturday's co-main event.
Yeah, I mean, what a fight that's going to be. You know, I mean, Shamil Musaev moving forwards or backing away and counter-striking has got some of the most dynamic striking that I've seen in the PFL for sure. I mean, what we've seen in these last couple of fights where he pumps his right hand to load his left hook. I mean, he's like spinning guys around on the spot with that left hook. And that's if he's moving forward. You know, if someone's backing him up against the fence, he's got some wicked spinning kicks. He's got great footwork. But then Kurmagomedov, I mean, you know, what he did to Jason Jackson, I don't think anybody expected him to do that. Been out for a long while. Don't really feel like I've seen the full extent of his game yet. And I feel like we're going to need someone like Kurmagomedov with a really well-rounded skill set to push Shamil Musaev. I was even surprised at how comfortable it was for him to beat Umalatov. I mean, Umalatov, a very, very technical fighter. But again, backed up against the fence, he moved away from the right hand and onto the left hook. You know, that was a massive win for Musaev, and I feel like this is going to quite possibly determine the best welterweight in the world right now on a technical level. Certainly, maybe not notoriety, but on a technical level, we might have the two best welterweights in the cage this week.
Yeah, no, it's. I don't think that is hyperbole. Definitely, if you don't believe it, I'd tell everyone to tune into that fight and kind of see for yourself. What do you think of Thad Jean? Does this guy have genuine star potential, you think, for PFL?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, he was incredible, wasn't he, last year? I mean, the way that he controlled the cage and the way that he controlled the crowd as well and the support that he had. Like, one of my favorite things of the tournament last year was having him cage side after his win and having all of his family there as well. I mean, his mum and dad were in the camera dancing and stuff, and he's riding a very special wave at the moment. And I feel like even though he's not got the same experience as some of these welterweights, the beliefs that he gets from those wins that he had last year are going to carry him a lot further. And the one other person we've got, you know, Logan Storley is just a really, really tough challenge for anybody in this weight class. He's able to get people to the floor, maul them, control them, drown them with that pressure. I mean, he's going to be active again soon as well. So, you know, he's another welterweight you've got to keep an eye on. Thad is definitely the star of the division right now. Although I will say Patrick Habarora, he's had two fights at welterweight now. Yeah. You know, he's knocked out Danny Roberts and Kevin Doucet in his first two fights at welterweight, you know, which is wild. So keep an eye out on Patrick Habarora as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you dropped his name. What about Cedric Doumbé? Do you think we get him back in mixed martial arts this year? A lot of people have missed him. He felt like such a big superstar in those events he competed on.
Yeah, I hope so. I heard he's out in Dubai. I've seen his name on a few things. I know he's going to do some plans, some meet and greets and stuff. And like all the noise that's coming out of him and his camp is that he wants to be back active and he wants to be competing again. I know he's had an injury that he's been dealing with that I think has slowed him down a little bit, slowed his prep down. He's shifted his focus onto some other studies. But yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to see Cedric back? I mean, his walkout against Zebo was one of the craziest walkouts I've ever seen. I've never seen Mark Goddard bring two fighters to the center of the cage before, and then one of the fighters leaves, and Mark just didn't do anything about it. You know what Goddard's like? He's like, "Hey, get back here!"
Yeah, he's in control in there.
Like Cedric was running the show, and it was what, 9 seconds, and you got Mbappe sat cage side, and I've literally got goosebumps thinking about it now. It was such a wild night, you know, the mattress and the whole chanting. I mean, it was Cedric's always been a special fighter. He was a big favorite of mine as a kickboxer. I want to see him back in there competing regularly, though, because I think an active Cedric, it brings such a character to the sport that I don't think anybody else can right now.
Yeah, and he brings that superstar energy. So very curious to see if we can get him back. Okay, let's close it out here, Dan. The main event on Saturday, the main event of this conversation is the lightweight division. We got Usman Nurmagomedov versus Alfie Davis headlining this card. Very compelling fight. These two are, you know, heating it up a little bit. I don't know, you can share some insights of what happened when they got face-to-face for the first stare down finally, but they built this fight well, and I mean, could sit here all day giving, you know, hyperbole and compliments to Usman Nurmagomedov, genuinely one of the best fighters in the world, maybe the best lightweight out there. And he's incredible. And any chance you get to see him is a treat, in my opinion. And Alfie Davis, you know, has all the confidence in the world coming off beating his childhood friend and teammate, Gadzi Rabadanov.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, isn't it, really? The win over Gadzi is a huge confidence booster, because he's got a very similar skill set to Usman, probably not quite as dynamic with his striking, but certainly more dangerous with his striking in the immediate sense. Like, Usman is very good at accumulating, like you saw against Paul Hughes in both of those fights. I mean, you know, it was funny. I watched the first round of the Paul Hughes fight because everyone was discussing it. And, oh, how'd you score it? You kind of miss the fact that Usman kicks you like 20, 25 times a round. Like, Paul didn't even notice it because it wasn't really bothering him too much, but it's scorecard. And this is where Usman's so good. His work rate's so high. His game's so diverse that he can throw something at you and then switch to something else. His chain wrestling constantly keeps people on the back foot. I mean, I was surprised that Paul did well to defend a lot of those takedowns. And I would imagine that Alfie studied that fight, you know, in great detail to try and figure out how he can keep it on the feet for as long as he can. I mean, that's going to be the challenge, isn't it? If Alfie gets too comfortable striking with Usman, he'll get taken down. If he keeps it a mixed martial arts fight, I think he's got a better chance of defending those takedowns, but it's still going to be incredibly difficult. You know, if you look at Alfie, it's not about winning the fight when you're Alfie. It's about winning the moments in the fight. And the moments in the fight, the likes of Clay Collard with that little spinning elbow that he caught, you know, Alfie's throwing 100 things like that around. Like, you don't even see some of them. Like, I was watching him shadowboxing at GB Top Team a little while back, and you've got everybody else on the mats and they're doing the regular stuff, and he's just jumping up and like Super Mario-ing around the place. But everything is like an elbow or a knee or a kick or something, and it only takes one of those to catch you and cut you in a 5-round fight, or knock you down and change the perspective of that round. Could be a 10-8 for Alfie in the first round, and that completely changes the pressure that Usman's got on his shoulders. There are so many ins and outs to this fight, and there are going to be so many little games within games when they're fighting each other that you're probably going to need to watch this fight 2 or 3 times. And I'm hoping we get a good chunk of time out of it, because I think it's going to be a real technical showcase. But it's also going to be a real test of Alfie's discipline with his striking, not rushing forward and getting taken down, because that's been his problem in the past, when people give him a bit too much space and he overcommits. But, I mean, Alfie's performances last year, though, have set him apart from all of the rest of the career that he's had. So I just can't count him out in this fight.
No, you can't. After he put that run together, he's been great. And that was an awesome preview of that there. I think on the Usman Nurmagomedov, I guess, storyline side, he's got 2 fights left on his contract. You talked to me a little bit about that not long ago. I've talked to his manager, who said, you know, he's not like these other guys who, you know, maybe want like the UFC belt and the glory. Like, if you pay him, he'll fight anywhere. And I think that's kind of like what he said, Usman's priorities after this fight. Like, how big of a thing for PFL is that going to be this year, making sure they could lock him in beyond, you know, the next fight after this one?
I think it's essential. You know, I think everybody is of the same mindset. You know, I know people within the PFL want him to stick around. From what I understand from his camp, they're very much considering, you know, staying with the PFL with his future and seeing where that can go. I mean, especially because, you know, like Khabib said a couple of things recently about the fact that, you know, it's not a meritocracy in the UFC anymore. You know, they're releasing people coming off wins now. So, you can't necessarily just be a winning fighter. You have to be the right type of winning fighter. And you just never know whether the UFC are going to value Usman in the same way that we would. I mean, I know he's got the Nurmagomedov name, but they've also got Umar and, you know, they've had other Nurmagomedovs. Like, Khabib was the guy, you know. And Usman is a very different fighter. The fact that he's got the Nurmagomedov name doesn't necessarily hint that he's going to be the same as Khabib, because he's not. He's very much an elite striker. I don't know. I mean, the good thing with Usman is that we've got plenty of talent coming through this division. You know, obviously Alf is coming through. You know, we've got Archie Colgan's on his way through as well. You know, we've got a lot of guys that are going to be chomping at the bit to get in there with Usman. So he's always going to have a challenge. He's never going to feel like he's beating everybody in the division. There's no one else to fight. I don't think that's going to be the case for him in this weight class. We've got a stacked lightweight division. But ultimately, who knows? I mean, you know, the only person that knows what Usman wants in his mind is him. And he does very much seem like a very kind of settled, this is my job, I'll do this, you pay me. But who knows? I mean, you know, the UFC's got a lot of pull, hasn't it? Those big three letters can do a lot for you. But I also feel like that might be shifting in the next few years as well. Keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah. yeah, we'll see. Okay, last note on lightweight here. Paul Hughes, you know, has been a great part of this organization, being, you know, an essential part of these past couple of years. But he is kind of in a tricky spot here with two losses to the champion. You know, a title change would do him absolute wonders here. But if it doesn't happen, what does the outlook for Paul Hughes in 2026 look like, in your opinion?
Look, I think Paul's got a lot of good options still. I mean, you know, you could even see Paul in there with the likes of Gadzi Rabadanov, you know, a teammate of Usman, someone that Alfie Davis has just beaten. You know, that would be a really interesting one, because it's going to be stylistically a similar fight to what he got against Usman. But I would imagine that Paul would feel Gadzi's striking is a little bit more easier to predict, because he's got a more narrow and focused skill set than Usman. Like, that would be a really, really interesting one. But, like I said, Archie Colgan's floating around. Like, he's going to need... I mean, if he's not in the next title shot, then he's going to need a good validating opponent to beat. And if he beats Paul Hughes, I don't think anyone's going to argue that he deserves a title shot from that. So I'm a big fan of Paul. I mean, I probably said that a lot while we've been talking today. But he's definitely still got a bright future ahead of him. Those fights against Usman will make him a better fighter. And I'm looking forward to seeing him back again. And I'd love to see him in Belfast. I mean, who knows what happens this weekend, but him against Alfie in Belfast would be awesome as well. Really, really fun. Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun. I had in my notes here, maybe the deepest division in PFL. So I think that says all you need to say about lightweight. We got Alexander Schauble coming back in Madrid as well. So yeah, a lot to cover there, Dan. This has been an absolute treat. I think, you know, if you are a PFL fan, we gave you everything you could ask for and more here in terms of storylines and talking points. Dan, you'll be calling the fights on Saturday with who? Sean O'Connell and just Randy? Or just you and Sean?
Yeah, I think we're a two-man booth this year. Randy's a superstar. He's got movies and all kinds of stuff that he's doing. So yeah. I think Sean and I are going to be holding it down for this year.
Okay, awesome, Dan. Well, we're very much looking forward to hearing that. I believe you can watch this one on ESPN Plus, actually, as well. ESPN Unlimited, all these things. Just check PFL's, you know, social media pages. The How to Watch stuff is all there. But yeah, Dan, I really appreciate you doing this. It means a lot. And I'm going to take a quick break to wrap things up. And appreciate your time, Dan.
Thanks for your time, brother. Always good talking to you.
That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dan for his time and all of that. I thought that was a very wide-ranging and extensive conversation, all about the PFL. PFL exclusive over here, talking about everything to come with this company. So I thought that was good stuff there, and I hope you all enjoyed it. And I'm curious to see all of your feedback. Where do you think PFL stands going into 2026? Do you have high hopes? Are you writing them off? Are you not paying attention to it much at all? Quite curious to know where it stands in the fans' eyes, because as we discussed there with Dan, I do think there is some fascinating elements and some great fighters and some storylines they can really push. It just does have to all come together. And truly it does this year, because as we stated many times, important year for PFL. But given Dan's comments there, it seems like the internal support, the internal vibe of the company is positive. After all the changes, Don Davis out, Pete Murray out, all that different stuff. John Martin clearly has a vision here, so we will see if he can execute it. So that's your preview of PFL for 2026. We'll see how it goes in the coming months, starting with this Saturday in Dubai. So that does it for here. We'll have coverage of that event over on MMA Junkie and everything else you need as far as combat sports and mixed martial arts coverage. Check that out. While you're here, too, make sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment, follow, all that different stuff. And that does it. Two episodes of The Bonfire in the book for this week to open up February. More to come, lots more to come. This could be a very big month for the show if everything works out as I have planned. And I will leave the teasers at that. So until next time, I will see you all back here by The Bonfire.